It's game Hello. Time, everybody.
Hi, well, it is game time. What game are we playing?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I don't know, Paul, you said you had a game. Is it called Kitchen Rescue?
Oh, we should do my new game at the end. I think it's
okay.
A closer. Cool. But I can talk about Paul's Kitchen Rescue.
Do tell.
First of all, I was going to mention that I have discovered I just want to drink crappy beer. Years old.
Is this? Can you give us the full story arc of your beer consumption?
Really, I just want it to be like beer flavored and not super strong and not super like heavy. And is so like cheap, shitty, so light beer.
Anti-hipster beer.
Well, kind of anti-hipster, but also that is kind of a hipster thing with like the what's
PBR.
The PBR. Here in Texas, the hipster beer is Lone Star.
Yep.
But same thing. National Beer of Texas, I believe Lone Star is.
That's correct.
So yeah, I just thought I would throw that out there. I've suddenly realized I'm not drinking the fancy IPAs or the like caramel milk latte stouts or anything like that, which, by the way, does anyone make caramel milk lattes?
I like immediately wanted that.
Delicious. I don't want this Yuengling light anymore. I want a caramel milk latte stout. Damn it. Oh. Okay, maybe I do kind of like those beers still. What age are you at when it comes to your alcohol consumption? JJ, I feel you're probably still at the pre-mixed Smirnoff cans.
No, actually, it's funny. I went to a place called Total Wine and More recently, and I used to go to a place called Specs in Texas. But now I decided to go to this Total Wine and More, and they had a small little pony keg that was like, you know, they have the Heineken and the light beer and all, but they had Golden Drock as a little pony keg sitting right beside
They had Golden Drock as a pony keg?
As a little pony keg. It was like $70. And I was like, I want to buy this. Like, this is my favorite beer on the planet. Literally sitting in front of me. My wife will kill me if I bring this home.
Wait, so you didn't buy it?
I didn't, but I took a picture of it. So
what's wrong with you? Why aren't you allowed to have nice things?
I don't know.
Because there's a hole in his kitchen floor.
I'm
not gonna let you live that down.
Thank you for representing all the disappointment of JJ's wife right now. Laura just channeled that really well. Wait, so what is this beer though? Because I haven't heard of it, and I like new beers because I'm that many years old still.
You've been to Belgium with us?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. So what's that have to do with it?
That's the beer JJ drinks when we're in Belgium.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. You know that big dragon in Ghent that's on there? The Golden Drock is represented as their beer of Ghent. And
there you go.
I go out of my way for it when I find it in Texas.
To be fair, Matt's like Fosdam Brussels cool. He's not DevOps Days Config Management Camp Ghent cool.
That's true.
I have been to Config Management Camp. Thank you. You little pretentious twat. But I do miss being that level of DevRel pretentious. I'm not that anymore. You're right. Well, thank you for the reminder of your beer du jour. How about you, Laura? Are you a certain bubbly beverage?
So years old? I typically don't drink alcohol in public. For various reasons, because I'm a small woman. But when I do drink and I'm at home, I'm actually more of a bourbon whiskey person, to be honest. Mm-hmm. That's what I kind of grew up with. Or actually, I do have a love of rosés. So, but generally, I don't drink in public.
Did you get into the frosé phase at all? Or
No. I went straight from cheap strawberry wine that I bought in the grocery store straight to like real adult beverages. So
and Matt, you just drink cooking wine, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Shaoxing wine with a little bit of salt in it just goes down easy and really evens out my evenings. Yeah, I'm not doing well because of it, but I'll survive. But I've grown to like more and more forms of alcohol with time, as I find like the quirky stuff that allows me to be that little bit of hipster that I am, where I just don't like the normal thing.
You put thyme in your cocktails?
Yeah, actually, there is a really good cocktail with thyme for sure.
Damn it.
But Pet Nat is a type of naturally fermented sparkling wine that I've been introduced to recently, and it's absolutely fun. It feels like a cross between like a decent wine and like a bubbly kind of sour in many ways. It's got a lot of
side note. Everyone is currently Googling. I can just see it on everyone's face. Like, what is this thing? And what?
Yeah. So I've got a friend who's like done wine tours and is, I think, even maybe certified in winology. I forget what the hell that's called.
Sommelier.
Yeah, sommelier. And he just brought one along. I'm like, oh, a wine I actually like consistently enjoy. And it, I think it's because it reminds me of like really funky sour beers, some of them, but there's like the lighter rosé ones as well. And now I see them everywhere now that I notice them. And I just bought a bunch and been trying them, and it's been fun. It's just, it feels like I'm discovered a totally new category.
So what you're saying though, is you said like, you don't really consistently enjoy wine.
Correct.
Okay. I'm just making sure I understood. I don't know. Yeah, like,
very important detail. Yep.
Upstate New York has some really good wines though.
Like, oh, sure. Yeah.
Find good ones.
But Minnesota, yeah, I guess that's fair. Doesn't. No, I
Minnesota
just,
doesn't. No, you're right. That's okay.
It's honestly, yeah. Laura, it comes down to you. Like when I do end up getting a little bit buzzed from wine, it doesn't feel right. Like I don't enjoy a wine drunk like I do a beer or whiskey one. I don't drink terribly often these days, but when I do, like that little bit of a fuzz to it is nice.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't know. I don't drink too drunk, or maybe just very, very slightly. Like that's fun. Tipsy, yeah. But not.
That's fun. Yeah. That's me.
Okay. Yeah. But no, I don't know. I guess I kind of miss out on a lot of the fun, different stuff because I don't drink in public. So
you don't miss out on anything fun.
Yeah. And it's when we're all hanging out together, we can go to, obviously a disc golf course is high on our list.
There we go.
Bowling is always an option. Yeah. Shuffleboard. But I feel like
I trust y'all. So like with you, it's probably fine. But yeah, generally if I don't know the people I'm with.
Completely respect that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, looking up Pet Nat, it did bother me a little bit that it has a focus on like biodynamic farming, which is, you know,
the is that the bone broth of wine?
It's the kind of farming that Gwyneth Paltrow would do.
Wait, which is means it a vagina? I think,
yeah. You're only doing biodynamic farming if you have got a jade egg up your woo-ha.
Okay. Well, that changes everything. Really, it's still good wine.
yeah, it can still be a good wine. I just anytime I see biodynamic, I just my woo alerts go off.
Woo. Yeah, no, that's very, very, very fair. If somebody I didn't already respect brought it to me, I would have been like, "This is stupid."
Anyways. On to Paul's Kitchen Rescue. So
you really had to drink that much to be able to tell us about your Kitchen Rescue.
Was it Gordon Ramsay or someone had that show where he would go and like, look at people's restaurants and would like tear them apart and tell them what they were doing wrong?
Yeah, definitely not Guy Fieri, but I appreciate it.
I recently did a surprise inspection of JJ's kitchen.
Oh, no.
And I discovered a crime beyond belief.
Oh no.
Matt, have a guess at the crime I discovered happening in front of me.
I think he actually has an entire section of his house dedicated to slowly sous-viding steaks. Like dozens at a time. Just like ribeyes galore, just melting away for 18 to 48 days.
It's like a dry aging fridge, but like...
Yeah, it feels like a pod people thing. Over
sous-viding, yeah. So it's like it's like in the Matrix, but instead of people in each of those pods, it's like a steak. So,
dude,
even worse than that.
Oh, so do I get a guess?
Oh yeah, please, Laura.
All right, so I'm going to awkwardly guess that he was microwaving water for tea.
Oh, what's wrong with that?
I'm coming from left field here. I'm going to give that a shot.
No, that's totally fine. It's just water.
No.
As long as it doesn't explode on you.
No. Bad Paul. No.
Wait, why? Well, are you getting microwaves in your water? Like, what's the problem with microwaving water?
I'm mostly just giving you shit. Oh, it's right. Okay.
I thought you were going to drop a truth
all
bomb
of,
on me.
All of my friends in England, the UK, all of that, they used to go like, oh, you're microwaving water for your tea. It was a whole big thing, but...
Yeah, you know, my grandmother would always talk about having to add the milk before you added the boiling water. Otherwise, you would burn the tea. So there's a weird British thing when it comes to tea water that I don't get. Yeah. So the crime was somebody had ribs in the oven.
What?
Wait, after smoking? Hold on.
No. He was... oven baking his ribs.
Yep.
Oh. Wait, why is it bad? Boy.
Because he's got a perfectly good big green egg out the back that takes just as much effort to get going as an oven. Like in the time it takes a preheated oven, you can get charcoal burning at the right temperature in a big green egg.
JJ,
I was
retort.
To be fair, in the state of Texas, it literally is a crime.
That does make sense. That
to not just cook ribs in the oven.
My retort is basically simply this: my big green egg is very far away from my kitchen, and I needed to cook food for the family. And I was
love how
like,
Paul's just making like crying gestures.
Yeah, and I was lazy, and I just figured I've never cooked. I mean, it's the same principle, right? Why not just put the ribs inside the oven? And it worked relatively well. I was kind of surprised.
Did you pour liquid smoke on it?
No, no smoke. Just hardcore red and a bit of barbecue sauce under the broiler before it started smoking. And they were a little bit wetter than I'd have preferred. Because the juices inside or whatever, because they get trapped inside the foil. So they kind of like boil inside of their own juices. But edible, they were great. I'm probably never going to do it again.
Especially not after this episode airs.
Yeah, exactly.
That was great.
But, you know, if I don't want to go out to my big green egg, at least I could kind of do. Oh, what I really wanted to do, which I never did, is all those juices from the ribs, I was hoping to catch underneath into a little pan or something so I could put some potatoes in there, or roast potatoes, so I could use the juices from the ribs to do that. But all the recipes that I read about doing ribs in the oven, they're all like wrap it as tight as you can to make sure it doesn't lose any of those juices so it doesn't dry out. So I'm like, ah, crap. So the whole point of me trying to like leverage this.
So question for you. If you can cook ribs mostly uncovered in a smoker and then not dry out, why would an oven be any different?
Joshua Wiseman told me this and I believe everything he says.
Well, in that case, it must be true. So actually on the potatoes, how did that go? Because we did talk about your potatoes. And how you're gonna cook them. What did you end up doing and how did they turn out?
Yeah. So what I did was I boiled them. With the skin on, or I cut them into quadrants, I guess, four pieces, but I didn't do the disc. I did it as like chunks. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I cleaned them first and then I did that. Then I boiled them for about until the point where the fork was soft. going in. And then I started melting some butter. And what I did was I drained the drained the water from the boiling potatoes, put some olive oil, or no, sorry, canola oil. Canola oil on there to put some fat on them. And then I put them in the oven at 450 for about 15, 20 minutes. So I started browning. Then as soon as they were browning, I pulled them out, put them back into a pot, put that butter on top of it and just shook it up with that. And then put it back in the oven for about 10 more minutes at most. And then put them on a plate and my family devoured them. So that was a win.
Nice.
That sounds great, man. Yeah, the butter process there, like adding it instead of just at the very tail end, but like rewarming it with the butter in there to really sink in. Yep. Sounds delicious.
But also knowing to not put the butter in at the start and burn it, that's some pro level cookery there.
That was what I was most paranoid about, was burning it with the butter. That's why I used the canola oil and to get the fat into it that kind of went into the potatoes. So then when everyone started eating the potatoes, like it was really good. It was more labor intensive, obviously, than just like throwing in some baked potato or baked potatoes into the oven, like put olive oil on them, put some salt and pepper and just throw them into the oven for like an hour or whatever. But this way was really, really great. So that was fun.
Nice. Now, speaking of just plain oven baking, America's Test Kitchen did a video recently-ish where they sort of went through the best ways to do baked potatoes. And the thing they did that I took away was they actually made like a super salty hot water, like slurry, and they kind of dipped the potatoes in that and kind of let them like fast brine. And that made a huge difference to the outcome of the potatoes. So next time you are doing just regular baked potatoes, that's your trick right there.
So I did try to put a lot of salt in there, but I was so paranoid about how much salt to put in the water. Are we talking like a handful of salt or like amount of salt?
So there's two things, right? You were doing it differently, right? So you were parboiling first, but at the same time, you're not really parboiling long enough for the salt to really get into the potatoes. So it'd be hard to over-salt them. The way I was talking, you're just making like a thin, salty, watery thing and just kind of doing a quick dunk just to like start them brining. And again, it would be hard to salt them too much because it's just the surface area of the potato.
Oh, watch me try. Hey, talking about, no, that wasn't a transition. I'm going to pretend JJ is going to cut that out.
It's not going
to
happen.
Well, so we're talking about food, and something that I've been dying to hear about is Laura's chai concentrate, because she's been promising to make chai concentrate.
I did it. Yeah, I did.
You did it. I've been, you actually it, did it.
We haven't actually been talking about it, so I keep forgetting to bring it up. But no, I made some chai concentrate. One of my favorite things is making some of that right now because it smells like fall for me. So basically you do it on the stove. You can do it in a camp oven as well. So I'll do this if I'm out, just bring all the spices with me. It is, let's see if I can remember everything that goes in it. So you basically put some water on the stove. And before you start boiling it, put in there star ansi, peppercorns, like whole peppercorns. Cloves, ginger. So you'll like cut up your ginger into fine pieces. I'll actually use ground ginger half the time just for speed. What else am I putting in here? Some vanilla extract, because I don't typically have vanilla beans in the house. Cinnamon, lots of cinnamon. You can get cinnamon sticks or just regular ground up cinnamon. What else am I forgetting? Cardamom. So put in a good bit of cardamom in there.
Your and body weight in sugar?
The whole seeds?
No sugar. No sugar.
Oh, really? Oh.
You can put some sugar in there. I prefer not to because the creamer that I typically add has a little bit of sugar in it. Sorry if I can't pronounce ANSI. A-N-I-S-E. Thank you, Paul. I don't know how it's actually pronounced in real life. I just know anise. How to find it on the shelf.
Okay. Anise. Star anise. Star
anise. All right. Star well, anise. It looks like antsy to me, so I'm going to keep pronouncing it my way. No, I'm just kidding. And what else am I forgetting that goes in there? Anyway, so you put all that in there. I know there's probably a spice or two I'm forgetting. I'll try to remember to post up the recipe up. And then I don't measure it. They have measurements. I don't actually measure it because I like mine a little bit spicier than they actually typically have in the recipe anyway. So I'll put a little bit of extra peppercorn and a little bit of extra ginger. You let that boil until it comes to a boil, then let it simmer for about 15 minutes. Then after it's simmered, grab a bunch of black tea bags. I use PG tips, black tea.
Yeah, PG tips.
So yeah. Good. Oh, yeah. So I grab about four of those for my little quart size pot that I do it in. Drop them in once everything has been simmering for about 15 minutes. Give that like 3 to 5 minutes at a simmer and then strain everything out. And that's my concentrate. It's good stuff. Good
what's
stuff.
What's your ratio of the concentrate to your creamer and water?
I do probably about like 80% concentrate, oh. Maybe 20% creamer. I know you're supposed to do like half and half, but I prefer the spice of the tea. And so for me, like, I'd rather have that over really special creamer. And for me, my favorite creamer, I typically like Chobani. Chobani makes a really good one that uses like real sugar, not corn syrup and all that, like real cream. Right now they actually have a pumpkin spice because it's pumpkin spice season in my brain. Yay. Don't shake your head at me. It's so good.
I can't have most of them. So I don't even,
yeah, that's
I
okay. just, I'm, but no, I'm on the camp I do of, mostly, no. I just mostly do the tea. Cause the tea tastes really good. Just the chai concentrate itself. If you can't actually have any of the sugars, like just a splash of milk in there is great. So if you gives a little bit of a spice, a little bit of a kick from the peppercorn and everything, but it is one of my big favorites for camping in the cold and everything, because it's really easy to pack.
All right. So I just learned a very important thing right here. And that was the Chobani creamer. Is it like actual cream, like dairy?
Yeah.
Cause I've never seen a dairy creamer. It's always been non-dairy creamer. And I hate them with a passion.
No, so Chobani, disgusting. Basically what they do is that they take the creamer and like the dairy product that comes off once they make the yogurt, they take the creamer part, like the cream and everything, and they mix that as part of their creamer. It's delicious. And I highly recommend it. It keeps for about 2 weeks opened in the fridge. And oh, it's good. So they have a peppermint mocha that comes out around now for Christmas time. They have the pumpkin spice, they have vanilla, and they have cookies and cream.
Oh my goodness, they have a cold brew with Chobani creamer. I'm learning. I'm learning things. They're gonna add to my waistline.
Oh, but your face is worth it.
Oh, so exciting.
You look so thrilled. I will say that I think I'm looking at my normal recipe that I kind of vaguely go off of just to remember things. It does actually call for brown sugar. I never put it in. It also calls for allspice if you'd like it. I also never put it in just because I like it my way.
You know, I totally support not putting sugar in because people can always add sugar in at any point in the drinking process. So it's going to be more widely enjoyable if it comes unsweetened.
And more culturally appropriated because Indian chai is very, very sugary, whether we like it or not.
No, I know. It's more, I guess, that for me, I don't even know if I would still call this chai. It's just, it's a really, really tasty black tea, spiced black tea.
It's mummy blogger chai, not Indian chai.
It sounds delicious and I was just starting shit for no reason. So
that's we can okay. move on. I mean, it like... I get it. I get that some people will not really like me for it, but if I can have a lovely spice drink, it's like having spiced apple cider from upstate. And
ooh, apple cider.
Yeah, we just got a big jug of apple cider and I'm very excited, but it is not the same as homemade.
No, not at all.
Oh, well.
What's the difference between apple cider and apple juice? I don't actually know.
Paul,
did I just break somebody? I'm sorry. Did I break? Like, I genuinely don't. Like, I don't drink. Like, I grew up in Texas. We don't. Okay. No, we don't drink this shit, right?
So that, it's actually a good question, and I don't know the answer, but I'm going to take a guess because, like, there's nothing like wider than just like making up an answer on the spot as if you actually know the real answer. And I'm going to say that apple cider is like a slowly pressed apple, whereas apple juice is a lot more like mechanically like separated from the.
How do I want to explain this? Do you want to take a crack at this?
Well, can I?
I've drank my body weight of this stuff for throughout my life. I couldn't tell you a damn thing about it, except that it tastes better. And I think it might be spiced to some degree is part of what comes to mind. So that's my very take with a huge grain of salt.
When I used to make Apple Vine with a W-E-I-N. Yeah. Apple Vine. That was used apple juice, which is basically fermented apple juice. You throw it into a big 5-gallon jug, throw in some champagne yeast, wait a month, and
yeah,
you drink that, you stand up, you sit back down because you don't realize how drunk you are. that was my early 20s. Go ahead.
So Landon's family will actually make apple cider fresh. Like that used to be a thing. So I kind of learned a lot about the making of kind of thing. But my understanding of how you make apple cider is you take the apples and you mash them. You mash them all up. And then you basically press the mash to make apple cider. It's not filtered. So you get the kind of the pulpiness-ish, but it's very fine almost.
Just and like the orange juice machines you see, you know, when they just like drop the oranges in and they smash the oranges and get the orange juice out.
No, it's I'm trying to remember. I think it's more like if you've ever seen like a wine press thing. I think it's more like that.
Okay.
It's been a while. But like it includes like the whole apple. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's the whole thing. I don't know if they actually pulled the seeds out. I hope they do. Now that I think about it,
I'm going to do the other favorite white people pastime thing. And I'm going to Google something and then present it as if it's my own knowledge. So the official description from the Massachusetts Department of Agriculture says cider is raw apple juice that has not undergone a filtration process to remove coarse particles of pulp or sediment. Oh. On the other hand, apple juice undergoes filtration to remove pulp and is then pasteurized to extend the shelf life. So
well, you can Laura get, you got can it get exactly pasteurized right. cider.
Right.
You can get pasteurized cider, but it's much more traditional to just get like the raw. Yeah. But regardless, it's very tasty. It's very amazing. And you can get it hard. So yes, they will ferment it in some way, shape, or form to make hard cider. But yeah. One of these days I want to go up and do like a real full making of the cider.
And let's talk about the real hero of fall and apple orchards, which is the apple cider donut, which is the most magical of creations that has apple cider in it and then is rolled in like a brown sugar and is like comes out perfectly soft. Yet also got that little bit of doughy cake batter to it. And I have been known to eat a full dozen of those on the way home from the apple orchard, which is why I was a very large child.
So is it more like an old fashioned donut that's rolled in sugar, but it's got like apple cider instead of whatever the other liquid is in the batter?
Exactly. Yeah, that's my understanding.
Yum. Delicious.
You basically use apple cider instead of like the water in the process. And rolled in like a, I think it's like a light brown sugar because it's not too heavy, but it's got that old fashioned feel, like not a full cake bake because those are a lot thicker, but not brioche either. It's like that very happy medium where it's like just got enough substance to it.
Also, I don't think you get judged if you eat a dozen donuts. I think if you eat 4 or 5 donuts, you get judged. If you eat a dozen donuts, you're a fucking hero.
Thank you. No, that's a fantastic clarification. It's more, bell curves. It like comes back down. Like no judgment if you have just one, no judgment if you can down a dozen.
All right.
In between, so you're a hot mess.
my judgment comes for that person that leaves only one for me. Mm. Like they eat everything except for the one that they got.
You should be lucky.
should be lucky? No, that's one is
left over. You should be consider yourself lucky. No.
But the person who ate them all is not so awesome on that bell curve. So I'm just saying.
There's a dozen donuts. They could have eaten 11 or eaten 12. They chose to restrain themselves to only eat 11 so that you could have a donut.
But
you
only should left be one.
Eternally thankful.
I think this is a framing effect. There's one for you to eat, one more than there would have been.
But maybe I want more than one.
That's true. And that's why you always buy donuts.
I can go buy my own dozen. Yeah, I know.
That's why you always leave with 2 dozen donuts. QED.
Yep. One box for you, one box for everyone else.
Exactly. Well,
hold it. No, you buy 2 boxes. You buy 2 dozen, but you make sure there's no evidence of the first dozen by the time you get there. Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
We had one night in Tokyo during OpenStack Tokyo where it was a long night and we walked past a Mr. Donut, which is kind of like the go-to donut franchise in Tokyo. And I ran in and bought a dozen donuts and nobody else wanted donuts. And I did eat the whole dozen.
Nice.
But I was decision-making impaired at the time. So I blame that as much as regular
gluttony. Did you regret said decision later?
I mean, actually, it was probably good that I had a lot of carbs in my body to offset the alcohol. Something to soak it up.
There you go.
All the horse head that you ate, or rabbit head, my bad. It was a callback to a previous episode, folks. He's not going around decapitating horses.
That's China, not Japan.
Yeah. Oh, damn it. Yeah. That was embarrassing.
We did it on the Twitter, on the thing, said like, all right, who can guess who ate what? So now you all know. Paul was the one who ate the rabbit head.
In Shanghai.
Yeah, you know.
In Shanghai.
Yeah, you know. So anyway.
What else is going on?
But I hear
on?
There's a game that we're gonna doing.
Can we do this thing
now?
Absolutely. Can we do this thing, go for Paul? It, Paul.
So this little game, I want to maybe make this a recurring or semi-recurring thing. And it's called Naming Things 2, because naming things is hard. And it is off to a great start. And basically, I'm going to give you the name of a thing, and you're going to tell me what it is and like who named it and like a brief description of it, right? You're going to try and guess.
Okay. Got it, man. Let's do this. Is it like a first one to ring in?
I think we all should give.
We all should give a shot. And actually, this one has 2 answers, but I'm looking for 1 answer over the other.
Okay. So yeah, that'll be obvious. Yeah.
And I'll give you a hint. No. Actually, I'll give you a hint to make it easier. It's an app.
It's
called Chubby. Oh God, I forgot it. Hang on. I want to make sure I get it right.
This is flawless.
It's called Chubby Checker. And there's a rap artist from like years ago whose rap name was Chubby Checker, and it's not him.
Okay, so I'm going to guess that it is a ordering app for a fast food company named Checkers. And my guess is that it was probably built by another company, but I'm going to say it came from Checkers and they probably called it Chubby Checkers for that reason. Some like food ordering app from this restaurant.
Okay. JJ? Chubby Checkers.
An app to shame you in your BMI?
Cool.
But you also have to say who made it. Hold on. You have to say who named it.
WebMD. They're just horrible, horrible company.
That was brilliant, actually. I like that. All right. Mine's similar theme, maybe a touch darker. It's an app to cross-reference the possible of catfishing happening on whatever dating app you're on. So
nice.
You like put someone's username in and you get like an actual reported picture of what they look like as a way of cross-referencing. And who is it made by? Maybe Tinder or some other dating app that really wants to also, wow. No, I don't know. That'd be so awful.
We all went so many different right. directions.
Well, let me tell you.
Actually, hold on. FYI, if you didn't know, Tinder and all the major app companies all roll up to one now. They're all owned by the same company now. Did you know?
Wait, for real?
Is it IBM?
Yeah, right.
It's the cognitive division of IBM. Yeah, that's all good. Watson's doing now is setting up exactly. dates.
No, it's Match. Match.com actually owns every major dating app. And it's when you look into the underpinnings of it all, it's a very, very interesting how it all, they use the same technology that Match.com uses and they just rebrand it in different ways. And all their databases are interconnected too.
Oh, it's like the Mormons, but for dating. Mm-hmm.
Paul's rubbing off of me because I was about to say something and I'm going to avoid saying it.
That was the worst thing I've heard today.
I'm sorry that I'm rubbing off on you. I'll attempt to cease and desist that horrible behavior.
All right, Paul, what is it?
So first of all, I'm going to make a correction because where I heard this from got it wrong. So the first correction is that Chubby Checker was a rock and roll singer, not a rap artist. So where I heard it from got that wrong. Otherwise, Chubby Checker is an app released by Hewlett Packard.
What?
That will estimate the length of your wiener by the size of your shoe.
What?
What?
I have to look this up. Wait a second. Right. Is this so real?
Chubby Checker, the rock and roll star, sued Hewlett Packard in 2013 over the name because he said it was causing irreparable damage and harm caused by the Chubby Checker, an app for Hewlett Packard's Palm OS platform. So there's a chance it wasn't Hewlett Packard that actually built the app, but they were the ones. I get a Palm OS. Yeah. They were the ones who he sued about the app and the app's name.
Yeah. And Chubby Checker is the one who did the twist. If you're at all familiar with like 60s music and it was what you danced to in school or whatever, let's do the twist.
Did he do the twist or did he have a cover of it?
No. No, he like
it's
maybe it was a cover, but that's the one that everybody right. dances to is Chubby right. Checker's.
I feel like I should have known his name then.
I recognized the name. I was like, that's not a rap artist, but maybe somebody actually did. So I don't know.
No, I totally got that wrong.
Anyway,
and I blame my sources for that. I should have Googled it before I actually did this versus after I did it.
Well,
the Chubby Checker special app allows users to input the shoe size of a man. UK, US, and European shoe sizes were accepted. And then would return an estimate of the size of another part of them.
Truly an investigative reporter. Paul.
On brand.
I have one that's just as good involving a fast food chain for a future episode.
That will be for next time. So let's quickly recap what you're going to cook this weekend so JJ can scamper off. JJ, what are you cooking?
So I found a cinnamon coffee cake recipe last week. I made it, and now my family just wants me to make it every Saturday now because it was devoured within 15 minutes of creating it. So
that's about right.
Yeah. So. Here we go.
Nice. Laura, are you up to anything?
I am packing for KubeCon, so I am not cooking anything special. Sorry.
More chai.
Probably more chai to fuel the packing, but yeah.
Yeah, it's KubeCon weekend. Paul, what are you up to?
I'm kind of in the same boat. I am not really planning anything this weekend, but I did have an exciting adventure trying to get a crowd cow order that was delivered twice, thawed and warm. And so I finally got my actual still frozen delivery, which includes, among other things, a pound of A5 Wagyu ground beef. So at some point in the near future, I will be doing A5 cheeseburgers.
You gonna make one for me?
Sure, I'll make one for you.
Sweet.
So jealous of that.
Maybe post-KubeCon, the three of us in Austin can have a an A5 Wagyu cheeseburger afternoon.
That gets Broberg on a plane. That gets Broberg on a plane. Not KubeCon, but an A5 Wagyu burger gets him on a plane to come down Austin.
It gets me pretty close. As the antithesis of that, I'm recreating a salad I really liked. Or it was a roasted beet and blueberry mint chive and then a couple other things I'm still trying to figure out, but it's absolutely delicious. And I just wanted to, you know, kind of stretch my knowledge of what I ate and try to remember it and put it together the same way. So
there must've been some goat cheese in there, like a soft goat cheese.
There wasn't on the one I ordered, but I think the one I'll make will have some soft goat cheese. That adds up.
Beets and goat's cheese go so well together.
Agreed. Well, great. I hope you enjoy your cooking for those that are, and your travels. If you are doing that, be safe and cover your faces as many times as possible while still breathing. And bye. See you post KubeCon.
Bye.